Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and apparently this weekend I'm coming around to, quote-unquote, wash your dishes.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, because this week we're looking at how we pay our suppliers and the importance of considering payment terms.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
This is, in fact, a subject that many in procurement pay little attention to or regard it as sort of trivial or a transactional thing. However, it's far from this. And how we approach the way that we pay our suppliers can be the source of great advantage. So to help us, our guest today has written a book called Supply Chain Finance Solutions. And he spent his career working with companies to help focus on maximizing working capital within supply chains. He has set up multiple programs for big companies, including Kellogg's, Sainsbury's, to maximize working capital with their suppliers. He's based in Miami, and today he is the co-founder of Calculum, a company that focuses on supply chain financing and leads with the statement, "You don't compete with companies, you compete with their supply chains." To help us understand this and what we can learn from it, please welcome to The Procurement Show, Oliver Billin. Oliver, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you join us all the way from Miami today.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. Very happy to be in your amazing show today.
And that's quite a statement that we had there. You don't compete with companies, you compete with their supply chains. This is the first time we've done a Procurement Show episode where we started talking about payment terms, but I'm confident we can make this exciting. So what exactly does that statement mean, and what exactly is supply chain finance?
Yeah, maybe let me start with the first point about payment terms. As you said, mostly procurement people or in the procurement world, people speak about cost, or now there's so many topics people speak about, correct? Supply chain disruptions, ESG, et cetera. But payment terms always play a second role. However, as we all know, in every B2B trade or every time somebody buys and sells goods or services, I would say you can always limit it to four main points. You always discuss the volume you're purchasing, the quality of the goods and services, then obviously the pricing. And the last point you have to discuss in every negotiation is, when do you pay me or when shall I pay you? Mm-hmm. And when it comes to payment terms, nobody knows what the same supplier is accepting from other customers.
Yeah.
So there's no transparency, and therefore some of these supply chains are not efficiently managed. And there's a lot of cash which is unused and locked in these supply chains.
Yeah, and it's really exciting that we're talking about this, because in all the time I've worked in procurement, that key thing you said there, you're negotiating payment terms with your suppliers. You have no idea what they're doing with other people and whether you've got a good deal or a bad deal.
Yeah, and actually, this is a really interesting topic to unpick, because it relates to the relationships you potentially have with your customers and suppliers. And also, there's a massive knock-on effect, which I think we're going to go into a lot of detail here. I've not actually thought a lot about payment terms in terms of how I operate as a business. I guess, depending on who the supplier is, sometimes we might just say we'll pay them when we get paid by our customer. So we've got that kind of relationship. Or we might think we'll hold on to the revenue as much as we can because it sits in a bank account. It might earn us a bit more interest. You scale that up. Some firms use that as entire methods of having working capital for investments, for example. So is there really an advantage to holding back on payment or creating payment terms that everyone's happy with? How does it work?
Yes, you raise a good point. Obviously, one effect has always the opposite effect on your counterparty, in this case, on your suppliers. And yeah, you can stretch it. It's a balance between, you have to know, are you aligned with your peers, with your competitors? Mm-hmm. Then also, are you hurting your suppliers? And maybe they go out of business or they cannot cope with the growth you have to provide you with the services and the products you need for your manufacturing, for your supply chain. And I'm always using this example that many people believe payment terms equals cash flow, mm-hmm. or maybe discounts, you know, if you pay somebody earlier. But I always say it goes beyond, because if you're paying somebody earlier than the market, that means you're actually acting as their bank. You're financing them. There's a cost to it, correct? And most people, when they buy goods and services, they always think about buying at the lowest cost, but they forget about what is the cost of capital by paying somebody earlier than everybody else. But then, much more important, the second aspect, which most people totally forget is that if I'm the nice customer and pay my supplier early than everybody else, that's fine. But usually these suppliers are then using this increased liquidity, because they get paid earlier by you, to be able to accept longer terms from your competitors. That means indirectly, you're not only financing your supplier, but you're financing your competitors. It goes beyond cash flow. It goes really about competing with your supply chain.
So that's a really interesting way of looking at this. And I don't think many procurement people look at it like that.
I'm going to add to that. I don't think many business people.
Well, right. Because savings, that's an obvious one. Most procurement functions, most individuals are incentivized based on savings, which is a pretty poor measure, really. It doesn't help in so many ways. Perhaps there's a cash flow dimension there, because finance have said you've got to preserve cash, so people have a target to maximize cash as well. So I think what happens is there'll be a negotiation that's around getting to that kind of best, lowest price, whatever that is. Part of that negotiation, can we talk about payment terms? Our policy is 90 days, or we want 60 days, or let's meet in the middle, or whatever. But I don't think it's really given the importance that it deserves. And I certainly don't think that buyers think of that in terms of, if I don't nail terms right here, I am indirectly helping our competitors to gain advantage over us.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
The toilet system for the Artemis 2 mission that recently observed the far side of the moon cost $23 million to develop and build. All that money, and yet the male astronauts still left the toilet seat up.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, unlocking the hidden value with your most important suppliers.
So this is obviously a big deal. Are there any examples that you can give us of industries that really benefit through thinking about this and perhaps thinking about how you finance the supply chain in a different way?
What is interesting, what I've seen through the last, I would say, unfortunately, 20 years, I'm in this business for a long time, is that Wall Street or the analysts are taking a way deeper look right now how companies are managing, or how efficiently they're managing their cash flow. Today's the most successful companies in terms of growth, in terms of market share, in terms of valuation, are the ones which are managing their working capital very efficiently. And there's a simple metrics for that, is the cash to cash cycle. So basically looking at how long it takes you to collect the monies from your clients versus how long it takes you to pay your suppliers, how fast you're turning your inventory. But it's not only looking at your company versus others, it's really comparing yourself with your peers in the market, because obviously every industry has its own differences in terms of cash to cash cycle. So what I want to say with that is, yeah, many examples exist, and usually these are the leaders in the market, in the food and beverage, pharmaceutical market, retailers, which really use their supply chain to finance their operations. So instead of going to a bank and getting a loan and liabilities, financial liabilities, where you have to pay now high interest rates, you work with your supplier and your customer to get free cash flow, basically funding based on data and based on evidence where you know you are aligned with the market.
So with all that in mind, I guess it's a case of looking at and discussing how companies can approach financing themselves, and whether they can't just do that, say, by giving away percentage discount as an example.
Correct. It's always a fine balance between pricing or discounts and terms, working capital. And this can change over time. Obviously, right now, we're in a time of high interest rate environment. So companies, we see many organizations which they are keeping their early payment cash discounts arrangements, which they have in the past. But for sure, they're not looking at providing or paying somebody early, because right now, cash and liquidity is expensive. So they are more into the focus of optimizing their working capital.
So we've seen recently, you know, recent years, how fragile supply chains are, and the recognition that our suppliers are as much part of the picture as we are, that's been driven home hard for companies around the world. So I'm thinking of a scenario where you've got a key supplier, or maybe where we're trying to drive sustainability throughout the supply chain. And for example, think about a scenario where we're a big multinational, but we rely on many thousands of individual farmsteads, perhaps they're family-owned farmsteads that are producing the things. Now, those farmsteads, they need to get paid immediately. They produce the stuff, they supply it to the aggregator, the market locally, they need to get paid. But then you've got the procurement driving something like a 90-day terms with their immediate suppliers. So already we've got this sort of scenario where people further down the supply chain are getting paid immediately, but there's this delay further up. So if we're going to think differently, do we need to start involving suppliers in discussions about our cash flow right at the start? And do we even need to have those discussions and be talking to the farmsteads and all of the players throughout the supply chain? I guess what I'm saying is, can we design the perfect flow of cash throughout an entire supply chain?
You raise a very good point. Many years ago, during the Obama administration, we analyzed the payment terms, mostly for the first-tier suppliers selling to the U.S. government. You know, so these were the Boeings and the large organizations. Mm-hmm. And what the research and the analysis showed is that the U.S. government is paying their domestic suppliers very early, okay, like other countries, other governments. However, these large organizations are not trickling down or not then pushing this cash flow, which they received from the government, down the food chain. So they are keeping this cash flow, mm-hmm. and they are then paying the second tier and third tier domestic, maybe SME supplier later. And this is a problem. And the government tried to change that by providing transparency and say, like, hey, we have a problem, but nothing changed, unfortunately. But right now, look, in the UK, the same situation, there's a new law being discussed or new regulation about payment terms, which would see a new limit of 60 days so that this doesn't happen, where large organizations can push, especially SME suppliers domestically at longer terms.
Yeah.
This does remind me of something in the UK. Do you remember the better payment practice that was announced? And I think it was like a self-regulating voluntary recommendation.
That nobody signed up to. It was voluntary.
Yeah, it seems what Oliver's saying is that perhaps there has to be some kind of intervention in order to strengthen the reliability of payment terms and supply chains. But it also makes me think about the external influences that may well have an impact on payment terms. Like, for example, at the moment, the political climate is quite fragile.
Yeah.
As we're recording, there's been a massive change in leadership in Hungary, and they're saying the EU is going to change the whole way it thinks about politics. Do those kind of external influences have an impact on payment terms? Do payment terms tend to flex with regards to what's happening elsewhere in the world and with different topics?
Yeah. We have seen just recently, we have a client which we work with in Israel. And it's a new situation for us looking at the data. But obviously, if you are a buyer and working procurement in Israel or in any country which is in this conflict zone, then obviously for a supplier, if you use credit insurance or just looking at, in general about the risk exposure, it has increased. And that means with every additional payment term you add to your supply chain, you increase the risk. And these risk premiums went up considerably. So either you have a price adjustment or you have a reduction of payment terms. So to your point, any change in risk, or it can be politically, it can be environmental, it can be many different risk aspects, can play a role, which is then reflected in payment terms and pricing.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Proclius?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Proclius. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man, open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott, this thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.
So you get to talk to a lot of companies, and so your knowledge of who's paying in what terms is really valuable, because normally the way this happens is there will be a buyer-supplier engagement. The buyer will say, we pay on 90 days, something like that.
You actually made me think now. It's like, we want to do business with so-and-so companies. Like, hang on, give Oliver a quick call to see if they're actually good for the cash.
But your business is about helping companies figure out how to do the supply chain financing bit, which I'm guessing means you've got this really good intelligence about who pays on what terms. So rather than buyers feeling their way, procurement people feeling their way in a negotiation to think, well, we're just going to try 90 days and see if they'll wear it. That kind of benchmark information, I mean, that's gold dust here, because if you can know that if you're a big retailer, you're negotiating for many tens of millions of dollars of spend, and if you can get an extra 10 days payment terms to match what your competitors are getting, that's big value to you. So I think what I'm saying here is that benchmark, are you able to give a benchmark? Are you able to say what good looks like for a particular industry?
Yes. And as we all know, procurement is about relationships. It's about insights on your specific categories and negotiation. And every negotiation, you have an advantage if you have more information than your counterparty and more insights. And this is basically what we offer. How we work with procurement teams is to prepare them and to empower them, because obviously they have their history, their relationship, the specific knowledge, but they have their knowledge. They don't know outside what is happening with the supplier and what are they dealing or accepting from other customers. So this is where this knowledge can provide huge advantage. And it's not only about increasing payment terms. It's about knowing where you stand. Because if you know, I'm a nice customer and I'm fine to pay somebody, let's say on day 30, but I know that this supplier is offering longer terms, then at least I can use that maybe to have a better contract for strategic goods and services, or maybe better pricing. So it's all about having these insights, and not just, very important, not just on the industry or on the category, but for each individual supplier, because it always looks different. Also with your leverage, their market share for specific products, their financial situation. So all that plays a role when looking at the optimal payment terms.
So I've got a big question for you now, and you probably won't be able to answer it, but I think, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. How long are people taking to pay right now?
It's always the same answer. It depends. But, what I have seen the last years, we saw a big push. Well, basically, it started in retail in general, because obviously retail, they already have almost 0 days on their receivables, because you and me as customers, we pay them, correct, as we get the product. So there's not so much improvement which can be done on the receivable side. So they always were naturally focusing on their inventory and on their dealing with their suppliers. So there we saw very early, the last 20 years, a push for terms. But then obviously these retailers, they are buying consumer goods, they're buying food and beverage, correct? Which you buy in the shop. So then it trickled down. Then the food and beverage companies and their investors said, like, okay, we are getting pushed on our terms now. We should do the same thing with our suppliers. So in the food and beverage industry worldwide, we saw a big push the last years, moving from 40 to 60, now to 90, now even higher terms. And we see now the same thing with a huge push in pharmaceuticals. So the new standard, I would say, is 90 days. And then automotive, it's a little bit more difficult right now, as we know, in the sector. So what we see in general with payment terms, there is not one specific term you can use. It all depends about your supply chain and your own company, and also what is happening in your industry, correct? So terms are not always going up. They also sometimes going down. And then there's regulations in different countries. So like everything in procurement, it's never boring, correct? There's always something happening. And same thing with payment terms. You have to adjust them, maybe not every week, but I would say you have to review them every year to be again aligned and consistent with what's happening in the market.
This is so interesting, because it's like, I really have not thought about the nuances, the implications and the ramifications of something so seemingly simple. Jonathan, it's like, do you think that this is a much undereducated aspect of procurement and supply chain.
It definitely is. And procurement people do not think about the importance of this bit beyond, oh, it'll help cash. I've been told by our finance department, we've got to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think people really understand the gravity of this. But I think also what you've just outlined, that really scares me, because as payment terms are pushing out, and I've sort of seen that, there comes a point where that's unsustainable. We're a small business and we work with big multinational companies. I've been doing this for 23 years. When we first started, our standard payment terms and what we typically were able to achieve with big multinationals was 30 days. And gradually over the years, that has pushed out and pushed out. And now I find myself in this position where I'm having a negotiation with a big multinational company who's saying, our policy is 120 days. Hmm. And my response is, we're just not going to do that because we're already acting as a bank to sort of big multinational companies. Now, there's a part of me that thinks that's kind of ethically wrong. But does that mean that if I'm a big multinational company and I'm trying to improve my working capital, I need to have a different approach for small suppliers, especially the ones that are going to innovate and do something quite exciting for me?
You raise a good point. It's like we always say, the shoemaker has the worst shoes, correct? The dentist, the worst teeth. So
yeah,
we should be considered as experts in negotiating payment terms. But we are dealing with very, very large organizations in different industries, and they're pushing our terms. So we have the same situation. We always ask for 30 days and they tell us, like, look, you help us negotiate these better terms. Why should we make an exception with you as a company, as a supplier yourself? So I agree with you, Jonathan. Like, one way how to solve it is, and we are consulting or help our clients to use a different approach for SMEs, for small, medium-sized enterprises. But for that, first you need to identify who is a small-sized enterprise. And then the other one is to really look at the risk aspects, so the financial strengths of each single supplier, to maybe in some cases you have to support them or you cannot push for terms. And the third point you mentioned now several times is supply chain finance, where supply chain finance basically allows one organization, in this case the buyer, to align their terms to the market. Because as we said before, it's easy to say like, hey, you should just pay your suppliers earlier. But if you do that, then you are not competing with your competitors. Mm. Therefore, you have to be aligned with your terms. But then how you can help your supplier is by introducing supply chain finance, where basically a third party, usually it's a bank or a fintech, which is backed up by many funders, allowing suppliers to have the options to select early payment terms minus a very small discount, which is deducted from the payment, which is usually based on the credit rating of the buyer. And these programs are now in place since over 20 years, very successful, and really helps both parties to be competitive and improve their working capital.
And we would call that invoice factoring, is that right?
Yes, like it's always the same, like, you know, discounting, dynamic discounting, factoring, supply chain finance. Right. So yes, at the end, it's always the same.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Daniel Walker, who's located in Raleigh-Durham, US, who writes, or rather types probably, "Dear Jonathan, we love the Procurement Show podcast."
Thank you.
Always a good way to start your question. "Thank you for keeping us all up to speed with what's happening in our industry. It seems I've been trying to build a high-performing procurement team for many years now and do all the things you've talked about. But as soon as we start making any progress, something happens and all we can do is firefight. COVID, supply chain disruptions, tariffs, war in the Middle East. My question is, how should procurement leaders be thinking about this and the constant stream of challenges we face? How can we build high-performing procurement when fires keep breaking out?"
Yeah, you raise a really good point. And this is something that I've seen a lot and am continuing to see, because it just feels like it's one thing after another. You just can't get on and do what you're there to do, because just as that war is not happening anymore, there's something else happening, or there's a tariff that's introduced or whatever it is. So what that's meant is procurement functions have just gone into firefighting mode. They've just got to deal with the next generation of supply chain volatilities or issues that they have. The thing we've got to remember here is it's never going to go back to that steady state. The old theory about change is that you have a period of uncertainty and change and then you get steady state. That theory is old. And the modern theory is that change is the new norm, that things will continue to change and we've just got to figure out a way to deal with that. So in an uncertain world where things could change, our response is to be ready for that and to be agile for that. Now, what that means from a procurement perspective is actually the things that we know well are the things that will help us if we do them properly. So if we're doing proper category management and supply relationship management, if we've got those things embedded, what we should be able to do is say, here's a category strategy. This is how we're sourcing that critical area of spend. If something happens, if war breaks out in this part of the world, if there's suddenly a supply chain disruption, if our tariffs change, then if we fully understand those supply chains and we're modeling them, we should be able to look at that and say, what is the impact of that? So the old-fashioned tools like PESEL will really help there. Porter's Five Forces, all of those core tools that we rely on and use, go right back to basics. If something changes, what's the impact? Now, increasingly, AI will do this because AI models will, they are not yet, but they will begin to help us have complex models of entire supply chains, entire global operations for a category, for a supplier, for a key area of spend. So if something changes there, we can not only detect it, but the AI can then predict the impact of that. There's a lot of talk of that. It's not quite there yet, but that will come. So what you've got to do is go right back to basics, make sure everybody's really well trained in category management, supply relationship management, those key tools. As something changes, work the tools and pivot. How does our category strategy change? What do we need to do for that supply chain? And then have the agility to then go and do it.
Back to basics. Good answer. And if you've got a question to ask Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, leading the way to realise sustainability goals across the supply base.
I'm going to go there.
You're not.
I am.
I think I know what you're
I'm going to go and ask the question. Good old AI. Well, I say good old AI. It's only about 3 years old. Can AI help here to help us kind of like optimize the flow of our cash, and I guess also analyze the flow of cash through supply chains?
We use AI extensively since the beginning, but there's one important point with AI for all of us outside of procurement, outside of our business, is with AI, you have to be careful because you're feeding these big engines, these big LLMs. So we are just using AI to enrich supplier profiles. So basically, if there's a company name, we get a lot of information about what is going on, about the risk aspects, about the industry news on these particular suppliers. But we are not feeding these LLMs with payment terms or with our spend volumes, etc. Because once it's out there, then yes, you can never make it back. And we are feeding these large engines. I think it's scary what's going on, but we have to work with it and we have to take advantage of it. So what we also do, how we use it, is usually a given client of ours sometimes have 10,000, 50,000 suppliers. So it's impossible, obviously, to negotiate and manage these large amounts of supplier, especially when it comes to understanding the payment terms, the cash implications. So we use AI there also to find out where are the low-hanging fruits, meaning where do I have a chance to win with my negotiation and where is the biggest impact on my cash flow so that I can concentrate my efforts as a category manager on these suppliers, while others with the tail end or the tail spend, I can automate this negotiation with agents, with AI agents. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that AI will do within a supply chain environment is give us much better visibility, much better transparency of everything that's happening in a supply chain. So we can manage it and monitor it from a sustainability perspective. But I wonder, can you ever see a world where there is full transparency of supply chains, not just in terms of what's happening, but in terms of how cash flows and everyone's just really open about who's holding onto the cash, what the terms are throughout a supply chain? So you take away the idea of a competitor having an advantage because there's a level playing field. Is there ever a scenario where AI and transparency will bring that, and this is something that we don't have to worry about in the future.
It was always my personal goal, and now with Calculum, is to create market efficiency and transparency. And one of that is obviously to have both parties, not only the buyer or procurement teams, having access to this information, but also the suppliers. And we have already now many clients, like very large food manufacturers, which we help them align and optimize their payment terms. But they call us and say, hey, Oliver, I'm getting pushed by these large retailers because I'm a supplier myself. So I would say the key solution is whereby both parties, the supplier and the buyer, have access to the same information. And based on their own goals, maybe one party is looking for better pricing, the other party maybe for more cash flow, you can align and optimize and have a break even for both parties. And at the end, to your point, Jonathan, it's AI plays a good big role when it comes to a lot of data, but I believe it will never replace the relationship between a procurement category manager and a salesperson on the other end. So this will always remain there. And then it's about negotiation. It's about finding the optimum, but based on the same data. And so right now we have so much data. To give you an idea, right now per month, we are adding about 200,000 suppliers onto the platform. We are looking now to flip the model in the coming months, whereby we will offer the same insights for our clients, which are now buyers, to give them same insights where they're acting as suppliers, where they can negotiate with their customers. So this is the goal, and we are moving, I think, very soon to a situation like that.
Wow.
I'm going to take all this and actually utilize this theory at home, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to negotiate extended payment terms with my local pizza outfit.
Do you think they'll go for it?
Well, I'm thinking if I match my digestion, that should give me at least 30 days. Then, as for the local Chinese, I really, you know where I'm going with this, don't I?
I do.
You know,
yes.
Yeah. In case you don't know, Oliver, we end all of our episodes. I think it's now an infamous question of what are your top three takeaways from this entire conversation? I think I've learned a lot today, but what are your top three takeaways?
I learned again that with experts in procurement, it's still a new topic. Maybe it's a little bit boring, but when you see the implications, it's quite exciting. And there is movement in these payment terms, especially now when we look at the different conflicts or the high interest rate environment. So this is the first thing. The second thing is it will never replace the relationships between procurement and their suppliers. And the third one, there's an end to it. You cannot continue like that. Mm-hmm. So the only way how to do it, this is just my personal view, laws are not the solution where the government steps in. The only solution can be where the market adjusts itself. And the only solution, I believe, is to provide both parties access to data where they have the same competitive advantage to negotiate their terms between each other.
That's brilliant. I really didn't think a podcast on payment terms could actually turn out to be as interesting as this one has been. So,
really good.
Oliver Berlin from Calculum, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Procurement Show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.